Good morning, everybody. I have a sense in me that our gaze now is at the boat to take us on. By the way, nothing is bad about that. It's all right. I have a nice ditty for us to work on. And I'm going to tell you what it is I want you to work on. And I'm going to ask you to have a conversation. And then we will have feedback in plenary and we will continue. Most of us here have some memory of January 1991. I was at a candidacy meeting in Kansas City in January 1991. A week or so before the first Gulf War started. And we were talking a little bit in snatches about whether there would be a war or not. We divided up into three groups, the committee did, to meet with the candidates who were there for their senior approval interviews. I was with three other colleagues and a candidate, a bright young man who was doing a marvelous job in the interview. In the course of which he said, "I like the questions. I would have wished that the question and justification were more practical." So I asked this question, which I'm asking you to think about, and I will allow time for you to talk among yourselves. I'm not going to promise you that I'll report to the candidacy process whether you have been approved. I said to him and my colleagues in the subcommittee, this now is just a week or so before the first Gulf War started. And there was a primary exam question on justification. I said, I want you to imagine that you're a Lutheran pastor, and for our context, I'm going to put it this way, you're a Lutheran pastor, or rostered person, or lay leader in your congregation. And you have access to Presidents Saddam Hussein and George Bush. And I said, don't think this is far-fetched. Tariq Aziz, who was foreign minister, later became deputy prime minister of Iraq, is a Christian. And I said, don't think this is far-fetched. Billy Graham was a guest in the White House, stayed overnight in the White House. He had access to the president. But it's you who have access to the president as pastor, rostered leader, lay leader, lay leader in your congregation. And you are the one there with, on a different occasion, the war hasn't started, but you have a chance to be with Presidents Saddam Hussein and George Bush. And here's the question. On the basis of your understanding of the doctrine of justification, what would you say to each of the presidents about not going to war? Okay? On the basis of your understanding of the doctrine of justification, what would you say to each of the presidents about not going to war? And I added, you don't have to speak about war as an expert. Your response must show that you understand what the doctrine of justification is and how it speaks in that context. Okay? Everybody got the question, the assignment? I would like you now to turn in fives or so and decide what you, and don't act as if it's unrealistic. Act as if you are hanging out with Saddam and George H.W. and they honestly want to hear. We're not talking about whether they'll agree with you, they will take your advice. That's not in your hands. What's in your hands is, on the basis of the doctrine of justification, you are asked to say why we should not go to war. We clear? Seeing nobody looking puzzled, we shall proceed with the conversation. Right? Nobody will come after you after seeing the tape and ask you why you said what you said. Okay, we are back in plenary, and Andy here has the microphone.
Mind if I sit down?
That's all right.
Justification by faith through grace frees us from thinking we can make things right with God or the other, in quotation marks, by our own initiative or efforts, even war. Rather, the doctrine of justification by faith pushes us to live by faith active in love, and war is the opposite of love. It causes great suffering, more hate, more separation, and hence more wars. Thank you.
And your name, sir, is?
Dean Peterson, and I don't know the names of some of these.
That's okay. You will stand in their place. Thank you very much. We have a hand here.
Well, I don't have exactly what I'm going to say to them, but we were talking about, I used an example that I read from Gerhard Faraday in one of his books where he said that this illustration for the doctrine of justification. He said there's a man or somebody who's driving a truck and they're drunk and they're driving down the road and a child, innocent child is playing in the middle of the street and he's going to be hitting this child, and at the last minute, somebody rushes out, saves the child, and gets hit and killed in the child's place. And the person who runs out and saves is Jesus. But we're the truck driver. We're not the innocent child, which is what we try to put ourselves in. And both George Bush and Saddam were pining to be the innocent child kind of role. And to realize that they're both drunk drivers heading toward each other, and they're going to take a lot of innocence with them when they go. So.
Yeah. Thank you very much. there was a lot more buzz than I see fingers going up.
I'm Carol Nelson from Yakima. We talked about going back to the commonalities. We talked about the God of Abraham and how we begin together. And we struggled over the fact that for us, justification is Jesus Christ. And that language doesn't wash with Islam, except for Islam, Jesus was a mighty prophet also, not that different from all the other prophets. And the lessons and the whole reconciliation idea that Jesus taught is a place to start. And then one of our folks talked about so justifiable outcomes. How can you look at, and there the truck is perfect, how can you look at racing down the road? So I think it's all of a piece, but we felt that going back to the commonality was important.
Thank you very much. Some more. A hand there, and then we'll lean to my left.
Mitch Jones, and I'm not speaking for the whole group, just from it, of our small group. My concern, my first thought is that I, as an American, I wanted to rush into some kind of statement that was going to have a causal effect and stop or move or start or do something. But I think what I was, as I reflected on that, you were asking me to speak out of who I am to this situation, regardless of whether or not there's going to be a causal effect from that. So what I would have done is say to them, from my perspective, you are both justified children of God. And as I understand what that means, you are called into a place of accountability and responsibility for the well-being of your neighbor. I would say to Saddam, the words of Moses, let those people go, get out of Kuwait. And I would say to George Herbert Walker Booth, this is not, I would not affirm your affecting of use of power to be concerned about the well-being of your neighbor. That's what I would say out of a doctrine of justification. How I would respond to whatever happens is next week's test question.
Thank you. Just leave your email address. I'll send it to you. We had a hand right up here, Andy.
David Solovet, and I'm reporting the thought that our group had that if Jesus is our righteousness, then to live out that righteousness of the one who says if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, then how can we justify the action of war? Secondly, that justification by grace through faith sets us free from believing that we bring salvation to others by exporting our brand of capitalism or democracy, assuming that idea was beginning to develop even back in 91.
Okay, thank you very much. Don't bother about wondering what's my impressions of your responses. That's not the enterprise, okay? I don't have a perfect answer. Yes, we have somebody way down there, and then we have somebody here and there.
We don't want to hear from him. Neither would George Bush or Saddam Hussein. And it's probably a good thing we weren't their advisors, because we had a hard time coming to any kind of consensus among us. So I'll just describe the conversation more than resolve. One of the points we visited was how the doctrine of justification recognizes that we are already, all of us, at war with God, and how you know, we tried to raise the question of, can you connect the dots between doctrine of justification and an ethic for war? we wrestled with the question, albeit briefly, does the doctrine of justification imply added value to one's life? We wondered this. We were much more comfortable with the law as the basis for our conversation than justification. We wish you would have assigned it that way, but also recognized that the law is a part of the doctrine of justification, and we're more comfortable using law language than gospel language, particularly if we were going to speak with Bush and Hussein in the same kind of way. We also discussed whether we would approach Bush differently than we would Hussein, because Bush is a Christian and Hussein is not, and suggested that with Hussein we would focus more on common humanity, and that how we as Christians could not see him as enemy before we would talk to him about anything or start to advise him. And then, you know, this is, I'm not speaking for the group, I'm only speaking for me, that with Bush, I think my approach would be to recall the parable of the man who was forgiven much and then failed to forgive just a little bit, and, you know, remind Bush of his relationship with his Lord. But that wouldn't be justification by faith, that would be persuasion by guilt. So...
Man, the theological juices are really flowing right now. We had a hand up here, and then we have a hand here.
Thank you, Scott Kramer. First thing we did was dump the word justification. In speaking to these two, because we felt that that probably would not resonate with them, as with many in the pews in our congregation. It's probably not the best place to start. So we sought a more common language, which for us would be freedom. That is something that folks could understand, and there would be broad definitions. And so approaching the question, not starting by talking about justification, but about freedom and redefining freedom. For us, it was freedom to act on behalf of the neighbor, in particular the least of these, because we are saved, and following Jesus' life of suffering love.
Thank you very much. They exhibited freedom. They changed the question. That's lovely. We had a hand here. Oh, was it here? Here.
Our conversation was very similar to yours, I think. We talked about that because Jesus has justified us, that we are free. And we're free not to have to be afraid. And it seemed that both of these men were acting out of fear. So free not to have to win over the other, free to love our neighbors.
Thank you. Did we have a hand somewhere here? Okay. Yes, we have a hand right there.
Well, we also had a difficult time with this, but we did decide that God's love is for both sides, and obviously the issue is deeper than what was on the surface. But God's care is for all people, and so we would have, I think, recommended compromise and examination of the issues, allowing God to work through the compromise. Maybe that's a form of cricket, I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. Some more. We don't want to rob anybody of an opportunity. Please.
My name is Daryl. I had a tough time here. I was surrounded by four women, and all I wanted to do was gossip. No, we felt that, one of our participants felt that if they could talk to Hussein or our group, got that there was plenty for everybody, and you'd like to see him share with all the people. And just in a general note, the president or the prime minister of Iran said the other day that The United States has to realize it's not the self-appointed peacekeeper it thinks it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You probably struggled to hold your own with those marvelous women giving you insights. That's lovely. Please.
I'm Jan Rood, and we felt that the starting point in our own understanding of the doctrine of justification was acknowledgement that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and that usually what leads into the preparations for war is self-righteousness or the attempt always to justify what it is that you're about to do, and to recognize that in all, both sides, there has been suffering inflicted and there has been injustice, and that's the beginning point for all of us, is to recognize our need, or I guess that sense of humility, that we come not as self-righteous or justified people, but that we have need for God to intervene on our behalf. We also talked about in our sense of justification, the need to recognize that no one person then has a special avenue. In other words, we don't stand out above others as one closer to God in the way that God deals with us, which is usually what happens in wars such as this, both sides claiming God on their side, but that we all stand equally in need of God and God equally for all of us. We talked about that as a way of breaking a cycle of violence sometimes. And we talked about Bonhoeffer and his sense of the difference between security and peace. When we seek security, we don't have peace. It becomes our obsession. And it's in justification, it's God who gives peace as a gift rather than us seeking to attain it.
Thank you. We have a hand over here.
Well, we talked about how it's grace, and which is unmerited love, and also that they needed to do it to be responsible. It's God who is in charge, and this is God's world, and that I would, if I was that person, I would advise, with President Bush being a Christian and from that particular Protestant background, you can definitely talk to him about justification by grace. And the example to be would be Esther coming before the king. And but later on I was thinking about it, and it wasn't something we discussed. If I thought about it, I would have said. But for Saddam, he saw himself as the reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar. And so I would remind him that it is God who is in charge from his Muslim background. This is God's world. That he is responsible as ruler for his people and responsible to others, and to negotiate with his neighbor and not conquer his neighbor. But also remind him what happened to Nebuchadnezzar when he said, "I am God." And he ended up insane eating grass for a while.
Okay, thank you. Have we allowed everybody a chance who wish to speak? Okay. Thank you very much. I perceive that you recognized in the conversation that it was a difficult assignment. And let me say from the very outset, after I came up with the question and gave it in the group for the young man to respond to, I began thinking, boy, I wouldn't have wanted to be asked this question. And it's a very, very difficult question. I have thought a bit about it, and I'll tell you, and it resonates with the conversation we have had, but this is not a final answer. But it's a real question that I wish to suggest to you we have to wrestle with. Not just in relation to this war, but to other situations. Okay? In my mind, as I thought about the question subsequent to the conversation, President Bush was being called a wimp. You remember that? That was some of the language in the press. Is he going to be a wimpy president in the face of this bully? And I got to thinking, you know, going to war is not going to take care of being a wimp. That if you go to war in order to have value and worth, not just in your own eyes, but in the eyes of the American people and the peoples of the world, if going to war is to do that, that is about finding righteousness and rightness before people, if not before God. And I believe that the doctrine of justification says you're striving to do that violates both God's good intentions and will hurt a lot of people. We will use up resources in order to take care of any feelings that you personally have and the nation might consequently feel. Any feelings you have of being a wimp, not being strong, not having the kind of worth you personally feel you should have as a president, and a nation feels you should display. In relation to Saddam, this was a difficult one, I bet, because you're talking to a Muslim. Whether you believe he's a devout Muslim is immaterial. You're talking to a Muslim, and I dare say, like me, most of you here is not expert on Islam. Like me, I'm not an expert. So I shan't pretend with him that I'm an expert. But remember there were reports of Sultan Suleiman, and you mentioned Nebuchadnezzar, this sense of this will be a symbol, not just for Saddam, but for the Islamic peoples of the world. He, in standing up, would create value and worth. My understanding of the doctrine of justification says to strive to create value and worth for yourself and for anybody apart from what God gives as gift for Jesus' sake is idolatrous. That's how far I have gone in thinking about it. I do believe that a challenge for us as Christians, certainly as Christians given the stewardship for the Lutheran heritage for the sake of the whole church and for the sake of God's people and the creation, we need to find ways in which to talk about the doctrine of justification that makes sense not only to people in the pew, but people in the streets and across cultures and religions. Otherwise, it's simply a museum artifact from the 16th century that we pull out every now and again and say we feel and are convinced that the article on justification is the chief article of the faith, but we really can't talk about it apart from the technical language we inherited. If that's where we are, then we might as well say we are into the museum work rather than living out this future of God in Jesus Christ which is proleptically present in Jesus' resurrection. We've got to find language to talk about the Christian faith in ways that people who are not initiated into the faith can at least grasp something of the essentials of the faith. And language of value and worth is language that is in the public world. Let's not fool ourselves. Pastors, rostered leaders, lay leaders, we all live in a world that says, how well are you doing at what you're called to do? And what's the markers? And if you're not measuring up to what the markers say, then your value diminishes. And let's face it, there are people in the pews who sit there who are making decisions about millions of dollars and lots of people's lives in the United States and across the world, and they're sitting there feeling like they really don't amount to much. Have you ever met somebody who said to you, pastor or friend, I've seen it all, lots of power I have in my hands, but I tell you this, don't get fooled. It doesn't amount to much in terms of who you are. That's a call for talking in non-technical language about God's justifying grace in Jesus Christ, which is a gift. What God declares for Jesus' sake, God's word makes happen. And I've actually seen people. My father-in-law, late father-in-law, was a Presbyterian pastor, served in New Jersey, north and south, and then most of his ministry in southeastern Kansas in Independence. He was a South Minneapolis boy until the day he died. If he ever said the cities, you were supposed to know he was talking about Minneapolis, St. Paul. He grew up Presbyterian, and he said those Lutherans are such nice people. Don't let be fooled. They live very simply, but they know how to manage money. And he said, you know, we Presbyterians are not that bad too, you know. Independence, Kansas, some of you might know, because of Sinclair Oil, in the early 1900s, a town of about 14,000 had more millionaires per capita in the U.S. than anywhere else. And my father-in-law became respected as the pastor in the community. And I remember walking down these broad streets in southeastern Kansas, and he would show me a gentleman that looked like a grizzly chap, a hobo. And he would say, see that gentleman there? Don't underestimate him. He's a millionaire many times over. And then he used to say to me, on several occasions, he would say, I have seen them all, rich people. They're not so rich and poor people. And he said, you know something? They all want to know they are loved and appreciated. We've got to find a way of talking about this radical work of God's justifying grace in Jesus Christ in ways that people are not hindered from understanding the gospel by using technical language that only experts can understand. I'm not knocking technical language. I'm saying it is un-Luther-like to use language that does not communicate the substance of the gospel. Okay? I have a little bit I wrote, so I'm going to read it now. So when you look at the tape, you'll see at least he gave us something. In the hour 15 minutes, since he used up so much time to make us talk. Justification is a complex word. Martin Luther felt that in his day, the church fundamentally taught that in essence, the Christian faith said that in order for a sinner, any human being, to become right with God, she or he had to do good works. Luther felt the church's teaching about the Christian faith distorted the message of the radical nature of God's gracious, decisive, total act in Jesus Christ, that is, the salvation, the forgiveness of sins, received in faith, which is itself a gift of the Holy Spirit. Luther felt that that had been distorted. He insisted on justification by faith alone, and this resulted in a division in the Catholic Church and Martin Luther's excommunication. Today, in the 21st century, we are in a different ecumenical, global, interreligious, cross-cultural, you just add the adjectives, climate. Lutherans and Catholics have been in dialogue since 1965 as a result of Vatican II on various topics, and among them was the topic of justification. The Lutheran Catholic Dialogue USA has been described as the longest standing bilateral dialogue in the world. The international dialogue has been extremely important. The dialogue in the USA has, in fact, been a model for bilateral dialogue. In 1999, on the 31st of October, in Augsburg, Germany, representatives of the Lutheran World Federation, heirs of Martin Luther, and representatives of the Roman Catholic Church signed the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification. Almost 500 years had elapsed, during which Lutherans and Roman Catholics, descendants of Luther, bearers of the tradition for the sake of the gospel, Lutherans have had condemnations of Roman Catholics, and Roman Catholics have had condemnations of Lutherans. I don't have to ask for a show of hands, but if you wish, you can put them up and say hallelujah. No, this is actually not a hallelujah time. But I bet here there are folks who could easily testify that they don't know where they got their suspicions of Catholics, but they just simply have them. I grew up in British Guyana, and then became Guyana. I hardly ever went to a Catholic church except for funerals, because unless it's a close funeral, you don't wait until you're invited to go to a funeral. You know the person or you know somebody who's related to the person, you go. And I was never taught in confirmation by the Lutheran missionaries in Sunday school or anywhere in church that I and we Lutherans are to be suspicious of Catholics. But I have to tell you this. I grew up believing that the Catholics don't quite know that it's Jesus alone and faith in him, they still have a lot of other things to do. Am I making sense to you all? 500 years of mutual condemnations and suspicions, and I dare say sadness in families when a member of the family married out. And worse yet, then the children were brought up as Catholics. The ethnic, the feelings of suspicion and hostility from the old country, and the religious, all combined to make us feel as if something terrible had happened and we just have to live with it. Almost 500 years, and we signed a joint declaration in which we said, we are fundamentally agreed on the doctrine of justification in terms of the gospel. 5 years later, last year, in reflecting on the fifth anniversary of the doctrine of justification, several persons spoke and wrote, and some of what was said was published by the Lutheran World Information. You can go to the elca.org website, go to Churchwide Department for Ecumenical Affairs, and you can type in joint declaration, and you'll see what I'm going to use, some of the material I'm going to use. It's very helpful. Our own presiding bishop, Mark Hansen, had the following to say. On the fifth anniversary of the signing of the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification, I find it very appropriate to publish this special issue of Lutheran World Information. Two main questions have clearly guided the editorial team responsible for the content of this issue. What has changed over the past 5 years? And what are the new challenges for the future? In 1999, the agreement was greeted with enthusiasm, but also with some skepticism. The differences in assessment have certainly remained. What has changed, however, is a widening of the frame of reference. It is clearer than ever that the doctrine of justification is not and should not be solely a Lutheran Roman Catholic affair. Also, it is not just a matter for scholars and church officials. The statements and feature stories in this special LWI issue illustrate the variety of perspectives and experiences from congregational life to ecumenical and even interfaith relations. They show that the topic of justification is relevant, whether we deal with issues of human rights in Colombia and India, with peace and reconciliation in Namibia, or with the experiences of young adults. Let us pray that the JDDJ may contribute to making the message of God's grace received by faith, meaningful and fruitful in the years ahead in our deeply troubled world. And I did not tell him the question I had asked. But you see, being presiding bishop, he was tackling our splendid question. I want to read to you, and then I shall wrap up because I know your gaze is at 10 o'clock. I thought it was a very creative issue because they asked different people from different walks of life and even religions to reflect. And I think we have come full circle in hearing again, it is absolutely important in any engagement that as Christians, humbly, we articulate and present what is at the heart of the Christian faith. A Muslim perspective on the concept of justification. He was asked to reflect. Sheikh Saliu Mbake, coordinator of the Interfaith Action for Peace in Africa. Mbake belongs to the Murid community, a Muslim Sufi order founded in Touba, Senegal in 1888. A Muslim reflects. Here is what he wrote. In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. Performing the five pillars of Islam is the foundation of the Islamic faith, and Muslims believe God ultimately has the grace to decide whom to shower his mercy on. Let me just say this. The Reformation was not over grace. It was how God's grace becomes a reality in human life. By faith plus works, or by faith alone. And I say that to remind us, the issue was not grace. God is gracious. But how does God's grace become a reality in human life? By faith. I say that for that reason, but also to remember, other religions talk about grace. Believe in grace. Christians talk about grace decisively, uniquely, in and through Jesus Christ. So watch any tendency to think of we are a religion or a faith of grace and other people's religions are not about grace. We need to keep that in mind. It is rather difficult to understand the concept of justification from an Islamic perspective. I will therefore limit myself to affirming that in light of Quranic teachings, we converge with the Christian Lutheran doctrine of justification by grace through faith only with the assumption that each individual is responsible for his or her own actions and that no one else can atone for them. You hear the language. Don't tell the Muslim, don't be particular about what you believe. No one else can atone for you. The absence of original sin in Islamic doctrine and the fact that we do not believe in the Trinity of God prohibit us from considering Jesus Christ as the bearer of our sins and the mediation through which we are justified and saved. Doing good works is not necessarily thought a guarantee of salvation, although God the Merciful promises various rewards for good deeds. The word Insha'a and its many derivations, such as Insha'a, Masha, meaning will, is omnipresent in the Holy Quran and denotes that God's will is what ultimately determines one's salvation. Quote, if he wills, he can take you away, O people, and bring others. Allah is ever all potent over that. Quran 4:133. According to a hadith, which is the Prophet's tradition, there lived a woman known to be so evil that everyone was convinced she was surely among those of the hellfire. However, she performed an act of kindness to a dog by fetching water with her shoe from a well and giving the thirsty to death dog to drink. She went to heaven for this act alone. So does one act justify salvation compared to an individual's many other acts? It brings us to the conclusion that it is ultimately God's will and choice that determines salvation for humankind. From a Sufi perspective, anyone who adores God with pure love in expectation of some reward is an associator. Hence, the rituals of worship and good works in general should be solely for our love for God and because of our faith in Him. Seeking His grace through acts He has mandated us to do is a way of gaining salvation, which eventually occurs only out of His will and mercy, not out of our merit. That's what a Muslim wrote in relation to the doctrine of justification. As we wind down, I want to encourage you not to be ashamed of talking about and sharing the good news of Jesus, crucified and risen for all. That's one. Two, I would encourage you not to shortchange yourselves as thinkers of the faith. God is not asking for your hearts, and you can do what you please with your heads. Let the devil have them. And I'm using that kind of dichotomous language simply to make the point that stewardship of the gifts God has given us, including the capacity to be there for others and to wrestle with hard questions through the intellect God has given us, that stewardship is most needed today. Otherwise, we will get together and we'll have confession, which runs something like this. It's those people in Washington, D.C., and it is those people in this place and that place, they're telling us what to do, and I'm asking, what have you been doing about the stewardship of your minds to offer alternative ways of understanding the state of affairs? And I want to say that on the basis of the doctrine of justification, there is the freedom to let go and try it out, because success or failure won't determine how you stand before God. We have two lovely young chaps, 20 and 18. They are very nice chaps, very polite, Winston and Alexander. They don't say it, but you'd sort of know that you are at a stage in your life, meaning me and I, when the boys know that we really don't know as much as we might have thought we knew. We look at them and we think, they're growing up in a world in which they, like your children and grandchildren and the children in your parishes and communities, they need to know it's a beautiful thing to use head and heart for the common good, for the sake of the good of the community, in order that God's good intention might in some approximate way be experienced. And we need to take the urging from God and take up that challenge to encourage the young, pray for them, encourage, celebrate. I said to one of my colleagues, I said, you know, my job involves spending a lot of time with students. They are my family, but they are not my family in my home. I like to hang out with people. It helps me to feel worthwhile and important when people hang out with me and think that I have something important to give. But in hanging out with others, there is only so much time to hang out with my own children. And I said to him, I said, you know, God has called me to be a steward of the job or the vocation I have, professor of systematic theology, which includes being pastor and friend and coach. A lot of my work is being a coach, spotting the talent and just saying, hey, you can do it, let's go, let's try it. That's a lot of my work is coaching. Coaching people to think theologically for the sake of the gospel. And I said to him, I said, you know, Dave, my hope is, as I am here for others, there are others out there for my children. Because God has called me to be here for others, and I believe God is calling others to be there for them. And I hope and pray that you hear that this wonderful heritage we have as Lutheran Christians, we are not the exclusive group of justification, is this remarkable, unconditional mercy of God for Jesus' sake that says, you're loved, you're forgiven, not on account of what you have done, but because of who I am, God speaking to us. Be free for the sake of others. I thank you so very much. Thank you.